Good morning. My name is Deacon Copeland, and again, we are very, very pleased to be with you here today. And I'll introduce myself a little bit more in a moment, but first we need to break open the beautiful Word of God that has been given to us in our readings today. When we read the Holy Scriptures, we seldom consider the writings as a whole, as it is lengthy and we do not have time to read the whole Bible at once. Rather, we get small portions that are like windows into something much larger. Sometimes it is a little like one of those TV game shows where they show the contestants only small portions of the picture or a phrase, and their task is to identify the whole image. Our readings today are a little like that, since they present different aspects of a small topic, the law of God. But each is drawn from a much larger context. In the reading from Deuteronomy, the book of the law, we hear Moses instructing the people of Israel. This is given to them at the time just before they are to enter into the promised land. It is a final admonition to follow God's commandments and laws that were set before them. Moses was referring to the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, and also the numerous other instructions given to the people on how they were to interact with one another, and especially how they were to worship God and to keep the feasts of the Lord. Moses' speech carried with it both promises and warnings to the people. Moses tried to explain to them the great benefits of following the statutes set before them, that is, why the law was good. Moses said that in following the law of God, they will be seen by the nations as a wise and intelligent people through their service of the Lord. Now, I can imagine some of the Israelites saying to themselves, "Why should I worry about what the peoples of the nations think about us?" That question opens up a bigger picture, a picture window of God's purpose in calling the people of Israel to be his special people, because they were to be a light to the nations. Not because they were special in their own right, but because God had a special purpose for them. They were the beginning of God's project of calling all people to holiness. They were called as a people to demonstrate fidelity to both the worship of God and to a behavior that was appropriate for the children of God. Now, fast forward past all of the good things and the not so good things that the Israel people attempted to do in following God's law, and come to the time of the gospel that we have read today. Here we find Jesus in confrontation with the Pharisees. Now, did Jesus find these religious people evil, or did he fault them for following the law of God presented by Moses and the prophets? No, not at all. He scolded them for following the traditions of the elders, rules that were added on and made to be equivalent with the laws given by God. Jesus did not even say that these traditions were all bad. Indeed, he must have been keeping most of them as a devout Jew, because the Pharisees did not accuse Jesus of not washing his hands. Jesus found fault with the Pharisees because their hearts were not engaged. They were not following all of those rules out of a love for God, but rather out of a love for scrupulosity and the appearance of holiness. In this passage, some readers would see a political point of view. See, Jesus is a liberal about following the laws. Quite to the contrary, Jesus clearly instructed that the laws of God must be carefully obeyed, but it was the laws added by men that caused him problems. In fact, it was not against the traditions or the laws added that Jesus found problems, as long as they fulfilled God's purpose and that is namely to honor him and to reflect God's love in the actions to our neighbors. Even more to the point, he claimed elsewhere in the scriptures that he was in his very person the fulfillment of the law and the prophets. And in another passage in the Gospels, Jesus made his intentions regarding the laws very clear when he was asked which of these laws were most important. And he told them, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your soul and all your mind and all your might, and your neighbor as yourself." He said that all the laws and the instructions of the prophets were summed up in those two instructions. If we get that right, everything else will fall into place. And we heard from the letter of James today, echoing these same instructions of Jesus, as he tells the early Christians, "Be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only." I am reminded of that song, which was popular in our churches a few years past. "They will know we are Christians by our love." The kind of love to which we are called as followers of Christ is a love of both heart and of action. In the past several weeks, the readings from the Gospel of John in the 6th chapter has called us to internalize Jesus, to allow him to integrate his life with ours, to strengthen us in that effort through the receipt of his body and blood through the Eucharist. A living faith that is not an external keeping of the laws. It is a call for true holiness. As a disciple of Christ, I am called to be transformed so that my life is no longer I, but Jesus living in me, enabling me to be God's child, possessing the mind of Christ, seeing with the eyes of Christ, and manifesting love by the actions of my hands in Christ's name. And that brings me to the reason for being here today, that junction between faith and action. And first, I want to be sure to thank the Diocese of Dodge City, your bishop, Father Chave, for welcoming us here and for all of you, and to speak to you today on behalf of our diocese, the Diocese of Gallup, which is located in New Mexico and Arizona. We are basically at the Four Corners area, the whole northwestern portion of New Mexico and the northeastern portion of Arizona, one of the few dioceses that actually stretches across the borders of two states. And we've been invited here by your Office of the Propagation of the Faith to introduce our ministry to you. Your regular sacrificial giving will allow our diocese, from your gifts, to continue our ministry. My purpose today is to share with you the nature of our ministry and to say thank you. Much of the area of our diocese consists of the tribal lands for the Native American people who live there. So let me introduce myself in the true Native fashion. When two traditional Navajo people meet together, they will introduce themselves formally by saying first the clan of their mother and the clan of their father, and then where they live and what they do. And so I was born from the Young clan in the Ford Kingsdown area, and I was born to, on my grandfather's side, my father's side, to the Kingsdown Ford clan. And so I'm an old Kansas boy, and I was born actually right here in Dodge City. After living on the farm out there between Ford and Kingsdown for a while, I moved on with my parents to Great Bend, where I went to school, and eventually to Sterling College for my college schooling. And then, like many good, well-educated Kansas boys, I went elsewhere to make a living. Those of us from Kansas often consider ourselves one of your finest exports, so thank you very much for getting me started in life. I subsequently went to New Orleans, where I attended medical school at Tulane University School of Medicine, and upon graduation joined the United States Army, where I served the people of our military and their families for years as an orthopedic surgeon. When I retired in 2001, my wife and I were looking for opportunities, and my wife is here with me, supervising me today. Thank you, dear, for coming along. And we were trying to find something in the way of ministry that we could do. We had often talked about maybe going to the mission field, but we had some medical problems that required being close to modern medical care. And one of the problems with modern orthopedic surgery is that it's very difficult to do without a good operating room, a hospital, and people skilled to help. And so in Gallup, New Mexico, we found a special place. It is a city that sits right in the middle of a very large area of disadvantaged people, the native people of our country. And it had a fine hospital provided there by the Public Health Service. It had good operating rooms, and they were always in need of people to come and help. So I had plenty of work to do in the things that I had been trained to do. And Maria was able to find things in the community that she could help with as well for her ministry. And we were able in this way to serve a people who are quite disadvantaged in many respects, much like a third world country. Some of their dwellings are simple wood, rough lumber structures with held together with mud and dirt floors. In Kansas, I was accustomed to seeing pickup trucks driving around with tanks in the back, and I knew that those tanks held fuel for the machinery in the fields. And when we arrived in Gallup, we found that the pickup trucks were running around with tanks in the back as well. But those tanks mostly had water to be taken home to the families and livestock. I had to make some adjustments in how I practiced my medical work, especially after surgery. They had to go home with the right equipment. Many of them did not have outdoor plumbing, and so a trip to the outhouse in the ice and the snow could be perilous on crutches. I had to be careful what kind of surgery and immobilization I provided, because Grandpa would still have to go out and chop wood for his stove, else he would freeze when he goes home. And there were medications that I could not send home because the patients had no refrigeration due to no refrigerator or electricity. The Diocese of Gallup covers a very large area, larger than many states, but is also one of the poorest regions of our country. Within our area, there are only three cities larger than 15,000 in population. But we have many small towns and small Catholic churches scattered all over that region. Some of our priests in Arizona travel up to 200 miles each weekend to visit and say Mass at all of their missions. At least 40% of the people live with incomes below the poverty level, and there are about 50% unemployment in many areas. The land is beautiful there, but that's hard to package and sell. It's not rich in agricultural land or minerals, which makes ranching one of its most common occupations. But as we know from our experience here in Kansas, it doesn't take very many people to maintain a ranch. When I partially retired from medical work in 2016, my lovely wife waltzed up to the bishop and said, "Well, Bishop, what are you going to do with my deacon husband after he retires from medicine?" And he says, "You know, I haven't thought about that, but I will." And about a month later, he asked me to become the chancellor. For those of you who don't know exactly what a chancellor does, it varies, but in a small place like ours, it means you're basically the chief executive officer for the diocese. So as far as work went, it was kind of out of the frying pan into the fire. But, you know, God laughs when we tell him our plans about retirement, right? Okay. So at any rate, But from my position as the chancellor, it gives me an opportunity to really know what's going on with our diocese. And from a financial and personnel point of view, you could say, oh, well, we should probably close down a bunch of these small churches and put them together. But if they're 50 miles apart and the people that you're trying to serve have poor transportation assets, that's not really a viable solution. By the way our boundaries are drawn, our diocese is poor by design. We have very few modern cities or industry or things that can bring about wealth. So as a result, we must be beggars, and that's why we are here. We cannot continue our ministry without you, the faithful of our country, who continue to contribute to our support. We need your help just to keep our doors open, to repair the roofs, to keep the lights on, and to support our charitable activity to a people in great need. To a certain extent, we need to just be present there for this people. The native people are a little slow to welcome things from strangers, and that includes a faith that is quite different than theirs. And so we need to be present on the long term, to be available when they have the need and when the Spirit brings them to us. So you are a part of making that ministry possible. And I know that many of you would be happy to come and spend a few hours with us or a few days if we lived close by, but we're a long way away. So your contributions that you make on a regular basis from your heart will go a long way to help us support our ministry. And I promise that we will use your money frugally, because I have to sign all the checks. And so I will watch how it is spent very well. And I don't sign one for myself, because I have the privilege of doing my job as a volunteer. If you come out our way, please stop and see us. Our chancery sits right on historic Highway 66, right in downtown Gallup, just like the song. We would love to have you come by and share a little time with us. If you would like to know a little bit more about the current activity in the diocese, you can go to our website, which is dioceseofgallup.org. Thank you again for your time and for your prayers and for the opportunity to be here with you. May God bless you abundantly.
Thank you, Deacon Copeland. Thank you for reminding us that the church is so much more than just the Cathedral of Our Lady of Guadalupe, more even than the Diocese of Dodge City, that the church is universal.